This is Images. I'm Fred Martino. Thanks for joining us. I'm very pleased to have with us on the program today Paul Gessing. He is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation in Albuquerque, and he deals with a wide variety of issues in that role. He's been a previous guest on KRWG-TV's Newsmakers, and I'm very pleased to have him on the radio today on Images. Paul, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Fred.
It's great to have you here, and one of the issues that we're going to be talking about first is something that our listeners here are very familiar with. In fact, we did an interview a few weeks ago on this program with a gentleman from a group called the Center for Civic Policy. They are one of the groups in the state of New Mexico promoting the idea of an increase in the state's minimum wage. As folks may remember, in the last legislative session, the legislature actually approved an increase in the minimum wage, as have some cities, including Albuquerque and many years ago Santa Fe, but the governor vetoed that legislation. And Paul, I wanted to get your take on this. This is certainly not only an issue for New Mexico, it's really something on the national stage with the president in his State of the Union address making a pitch for this idea on the federal level to increase the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage, to $9 an hour.
Right, and I actually haven't heard much about this particular proposal, the new one here in New Mexico. Certainly, minimum wages are a hot topic. They tend to poll relatively well, get broad support from moderates and liberals, and receive a decent number of votes, you know, 60%+ quite often, like the Albuquerque ballot measure received on the minimum wage increase in this city. There's also, of course, you didn't mention the labor union orchestrated minimum wage protests around the country. I don't think they've really made their way to Albuquerque, but they're talking about doubling the minimum wage nationwide from $7.50 to $15. Now, the governor did veto the minimum wage in the last session. I'm not exactly sure how the proponents of that are going to overcome the governor's opposition here in New Mexico if they were to do this statewide. We do not have, as a state, the process called the initiative, which allows average folks to go and collect signatures to put something on the ballot. So we really only have two options here in New Mexico. We can have the legislature do something, and in a 30-day session, which will be the 2014 session, really the governor controls the agenda. So that's going to be really tough, I think, for those folks to achieve. And then we have the constitutional amendment process, and this was attempted also during the 2013 session, and the increase in the minimum wage, doing it in the Constitution, a little tougher, higher hurdles, vote percentages, that kind of thing. But it does avoid the governor's signature. But that actually failed in one of the legislative committees. So I think from a purely political point of view, any effort to increase the minimum wage is going to face some pretty tall hurdles in New Mexico. And quite honestly, I think that it's in an economic viewpoint, a bit of an overhyped issue. I think that while somewhat economically harmful, and we're not fans of minimum wages, the Cato Institute came out with a report recently indicating that welfare programs can generate up to $13.70 an hour in New Mexico. And I think when you're looking at paying somebody $7.50 or $8.50 an hour, and they have these relatively generous government programs out there, that's really the issue that needs to be addressed, and how we incentivize people to work or to receive government benefits. So I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of traction, and that this is going to be an issue that moves forward in New Mexico.
Okay, well, it will be very interesting to see. Of course, the one difference in the 2014 legislative session as far as the governor and her decision is that next year we also have a governor's race as well. So this would be something.
That is true, although I don't think she's going to change her position on this one. I think her base, the Republican, the conservative voter, would be pretty upset at her for doing that. But
and we should point out, Paul, I did point this out in the previous interview that we did. The governor did say before she made the veto that she would have approved a small increase in the minimum wage, 30 cents an hour. So from going to $7.80 an hour, but that was never on her desk.
That is very true.
Okay. Well, we'll move on because we have another big financial issue in the state of New Mexico. This is actually, something that folks have been talking about for some time, but now it's quite clear something has to be done. The lottery scholarship is going broke. And the question is, what should be done? As you know, there are a lot of different ideas on this. Some say make it needs-based. Some say take a look at the qualifications of the students who are applying and make it merit-based. Some folks say combine the two, combine a merit and needs. And others are, I guess, concerned, don't want any change at all, although financially that doesn't seem possible. The only possibility there is if there is no change, I suppose, is to reduce the benefit. Tell me your thoughts on this and if there is an official position of the Rio Grande Foundation, a position on this idea.
Well, to say there's an official position, it's something that we look at closely, and we try to develop ideas and principles for dealing with these kinds of problems. One thing is some other states have moved to privatize the management of their lotteries. So we think that there might be cost savings and additional revenue to be put on the table without dipping into general fund revenues if we considered private management alternatives. So that's the first thing I would consider. And that's certainly going to be politically controversial, but if the legislature is serious about keeping this program going for the benefit of New Mexico students, it has to be on the table, and we need to consider how to make the management of the lottery better, more efficient in terms of the revenue side of things. What I'd say we should not do is to throw additional money, general fund revenue, into the pot for these scholarships. That's just not good policy. We already took a step in that direction during the last year with the tobacco settlement revenue that's going to be put into the lottery funds. I think that was a bad decision. It was a stopgap sort of move. And we just don't need to muddy the waters. We need to keep the lottery program separate and not let this become just another, not welfare program, but basically another form of subsidizing those who go to college. In terms of needs-based and the question in terms of student performance and whether it should be merit-based, I think you have to do some combination of those two. I think a purely needs-based situation is going to not gain the political support necessary to get through the legislature. And I also think that the merit-based issue is not going to go very far as well. So I think
you're
going to have to give.
Let me ask you that, though. The merit bit, when you say it's not going to go very far, are you saying you don't think that there's any appetite for any kind of merit-based requirement? Because, quite frankly, I don't know if this is something that only is the case in New Mexico, but it's certainly quite unusual that this scholarship is given to anyone who graduates. I mean, you do have to have a 2.5 GPA in your college studies, but your high school GPA is not a factor. As long as you graduate, you get the scholarship. Let me ask you, I mean, is there an appetite for some kind of merit?
Oh, absolutely. I think there has to be, and that's my point, that it doesn't have to be done at the high school level. I think it's actually more fair to do this at the college level because, you know, you look at the high school situation is going to be very disparate. You're going to have some excellent, excellent high schools with students that maybe struggle to achieve a reasonable GPA, and then you're going to have some relatively poor schools that may have kids with grade inflation issues, all that kind of stuff. You're going to, I think, have a more equitable distribution when you have the college level, smaller numbers of institutions. And now you still have, you know, it's a very real issue. Someone who's at New Mexico Tech taking physics or some very in-depth, detailed class that is going to struggle like heck to get that 2.5 versus someone who's taking general studies at another college that, quite frankly, it's not as big of a push. So I do think there needs to be, along with the merit-based discussion, some exploration of, you know, the STEM, the science, technology, education, mathematics. How do we
engineering, mathematics,
engineering? Sorry. How do we create some incentives, or at least not use this program in a way that disincentivizes people from taking those harder classes?
So yeah, you've raised an important issue there.
Issue.
Yeah, that, I mean, you've really broadened the discussion there with that point, because this is true. I mean, if we're only looking at merit-based as far as your grades in your first semester, second semester of college, certainly, I'm sure there are a wide range of difficulty that we're talking about in terms of the classes students take. So it is very difficult to decide this. And what you're saying may be an argument, at least some may use, to say this should just be a needs-based decision, because it is very difficult. And grade inflation, we know, is an issue, not just in high school, but in college.
Yeah, well, I think both need to be addressed. I think that having both on the table will provide some ability for give and take on the issue. But like I said at the outset, we need to consider market ways to increase the overall revenue available for the program without delving into the general fund as a source of that money. And then have that conversation about how we maximize the effectiveness of this program without leading students into easier, in a way, from more difficult fields of study. So, yeah, it's a very complicated issue.
Okay, very interesting, too. Well, it'll be interesting to see what the legislature does, if anything, in the next session about the lottery scholarship, something that a lot of students depend on. Well, you're saying that there are a lot of folks in the state of New Mexico who depend on something else, something that you're not too happy about, and that is the rapid growth of government bodies.
Yes, the Washington Post, obviously a major national newspaper, did a story on the number of governing bodies around the country, and they looked at it, including state level, kind of which states saw increases in the number of governing bodies. And I honestly don't have an explanation for why this happened, but if you look at a chart that we made available at errorsofenchantment.com, that's our blog, it was also in the original story on the Washington Post, they show a massive increase starting in 1992, through the mid-90s in New Mexico, and it's literally just about a direct line straight up. So I don't know what happened in the mid-90s. I've tried to talk to some folks who I consider to be in the know about the increase in governing bodies during that era, but it created a under this Washington Post report, a situation where New Mexico was one of the top in the country, I believe second, in terms of the creation of new government bodies during this the time period study, going all the way back to 1940. So it's very interesting. It definitely requires some additional work and research and figuring out why we have so many bodies. I think the broader issue for us is that the more governing bodies have, the more tax taxes that they can levy, the more kind of conflicts you get between, say, a city and a county that have overlapping jurisdictions. You got duplication of government bureaucrats and government roles and resources. So maybe it's worth, and these commissions always come out with the highest of hopes and seem to constantly be very difficult. They find it very difficult when they take on some of these structural issues. But it needs to be considered and understood where New Mexico is over-governed and how we might address some of the just over-governance and too many governing body issues that we have in New Mexico.
And you say we can read more about this on your website. It's errorsofenchantment.com, is it?
That's it. That's okay. Our blog, and that's updated pretty much daily during the week.
Okay. Well, we'll check that out. You've always got interesting stuff there. I get your emails and get links to these stories. Another very important issue for all of us to think about right now, you do have a story about this on your website too, I believe. That is a question about how will the new federal health law, the Affordable Care Act, affect the state of New Mexico. Of course, starting in October, folks are going to be signing up for health insurance through the exchanges. And of course, for folks who qualify for the new expanded Medicaid program, they're going to be signing up for that as well. Coverage to begin in January. What did you find out about this?
Well, a new report came out from, I guess you'd call it another center-right friendly think tank, but it's a national organization based in New York City called the Manhattan Institute. And they took a look at what the expected insurance rate increases are on a state-by-state basis. And according to their report, insurance rates will rise 130% in the state of New Mexico as we see Obama get started. The next highest state will be Vermont, with rates only increasing by 97%. Now, Manhattan Institute is free market. I'm not going to, much like Rio Grande Foundation, to have a perspective on these issues. They didn't have any incentive to say New Mexico as opposed to other states. So their reading of the data clearly led them to this fact or this viewpoint that New Mexico is going to see some rather significant insurance rate increases once Obamacare kicks in. And other states, they found some would decrease the price of insurance, et cetera. Overall, they did find increases. And I think most organizations, this is not the only report out there. Kaiser has a separate report. Kaiser's healthcare think tank, more just centrist, and they found different conclusions in terms of where there'd be increases and decreases. But at least according to one report, New Mexico is really going to get socked with significant health insurance increases.
And of course, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, we're going to just have to look and see what the data tells us, because the state insurance chief in the state of New Mexico, he was quoted in the Albuquerque Journal recently saying that he was thrilled that there were going to be five companies competing on the New Mexico Health Exchange, and that he believed that this would be good in terms of competition. I don't know, five doesn't seem like a big number to me, but that is what he's saying, is that he believes that it's not going to be a driver of big rate increases, but we'll have to wait and see. Let me get into that, kind of as a nice segue into the broader question for you. What do you think about the implementation of the Affordable Care Act in New Mexico, how it's going?
Well, the main thing driving that right now, and I would agree with you that we'll just have to wait and see. The law is not going anywhere. I think the Republicans in Congress are trying to make it a continuing issue, but they're really not going to actually be able to do anything to stall implementation of this law. So we'll all just wait and see. But in terms of New Mexico implementing the law, the exchange is kind of the primary area that I see New Mexico struggling with, and I think it's very open to discussion how that particular component of the law is coming along. It sounds like they're somewhat delayed. I know they're working like heck to get the exchange. And this is kind of the Travelocity or the Expedia of health insurance that each of the states is coming out with. That you're saying the five different healthcare providers or health insurance providers will be working with this exchange. And
that's what the state insurance chief said. And I'm assuming
New Mexicans will be going to theoretically get the best deal they can under this law. I don't know that they're going to be ready at the start of this law's implementation and when they are supposed to be. But I think they're making pretty good progress. One of my board members, Dr. Dean Waldman, is actually on the exchange board, and so he's given me some updates and said they are working furiously to get that exchange done. Of course, with any complicated piece of software, there's always going to be bugs to work out.
Oh, sure.
You'll certainly see some testing and some people suffering from some live results that may not actually fit reality, but other than that, the law is just slowly grinding its way. I mean, the political issues are really the ones that are getting all the headlines, and the implementation is just slowly grinding forward. And I think that as the law is written, where the exemptions have not been provided, and where the law will move forward, it's on track to be implemented in the state of New Mexico, with the exchange being a possible laggard in that.
Okay. I only have a few minutes left here, Paul. One final question. You say, this was a story that didn't get much coverage, at least not in southern New Mexico, judge made the right call recently in striking down the Albuquerque campaign law. Tell me about this.
Yes. So Albuquerque had a very restrictive campaign finance law that anybody essentially doing business in one contractual way or another with the city could not make donations to their preferred city councilor or mayor. And a federal judge under the Citizens United, I think that was the guidepost for her decision, although it didn't certainly go as far as Citizens United, said that just because somebody has some business or their employer has some business, like I talked to one of the attorneys who was on the side suing the city, said if you worked for UNM and UNM had a contract with the city of Albuquerque, like say the hospital or something, you couldn't donate under the real reading, the way this law was to be interpreted.
So it was thrown out.
It was just very extreme and over the top.
Interesting. Very interesting and important for the state of New Mexico. That sets precedent, I'm sure, if other cities think of starting a law like that. Paul Gessing, he is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, always a pleasure.